Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Yo, fellas.
Yes.
What's up?
I'm thinking we probably should find something else to do besides the snake draft.
Well, I knew that was coming anyway. I was waiting for when you opened your mouth coming out the gate, you won. So, okay, you won.
On my shelf, I've run out of space for all my trophies.
Dude, I'm surprised. I'm surprised at this one, LD. I'm shocked.
Why?
Well, for one, the margin of victory, you're at 50% of the votes on this one. And I thought Travis clearly had the best roster, but the black vote just will never forgive Travis. I mean, you really need to apologize because that
well, especially now,
Travis. That has killed you. We're going back to April.
That's fine. I've realized that this is not about my picks. It's a personal thing that they decided to penalty.
No.
You shouldn't have picked the general Lee.
It is about your picks. You see, when you look at the and for those who don't remember, we did a snake draft in honor of Memorial Day about our favorite wartime movies. Now, Keyshawn lost because most of his movies weren't about the war. But Travis,
the military.
But Travis, his problem was his was targeted around one central era of time. And Vietnam. So if you're not of a certain age, you might not have seen some of these movies. Whereas I open it up, I got a little bit for the 20-somethings, something for the 30-somethings, and something for the 40s and 50-somethings. All your movies, Travis, are for Gen Xers and Gen Xers alone.
You won, man. You won.
My picks were the best. I'm comfortable.
And I like my movie, so now. Yeah. Your picks are the best. I like my movie, so now.
It wasn't right now you like the movie, but what's The Messenger about? I don't even think you've even seen The Messenger.
Why are you trying to put me on blast? Why are you out there snitching carrying on?
Man, you probably Googled it, huh?
When you made the pick yesterday, Jorge was like, he Googled that one. He don't know.
He looked up war movies, and that's the first thing that popped up.
Whatever it takes.
Hey, man.
At least it's a war movie.
Hey, I figured The Messenger, our audience, I can steal some of Travis's people, The Messenger.
Yeah, I don't know. Another win for LZ, I guess.
We're keeping tally. Six for LZ, four for Key, and
yeah, we don't need Travis to go any further. It's fine. We can just cut it off right there.
Wait. Can I at least get my music? There we go.
All right. Six wins for LZ. I guess that's what it is right now. Good
news yesterday,
guys. I got
a video
yesterday,
rings
with MJ. so far.
You're still hating on MJ. Let it go.
The NHL is the first major American sports league to say, we are coming back, and this is how we're coming back. There's been all sorts of speculation about other leagues, and maybe they'll do it here, maybe they'll do it there, pick it up at the playoffs, not pick it up at the playoffs. NHL, let's listen to Gary Bettman right here. The NHL said, we're coming back, and 24 of our 31 teams are going to be in the playoffs.
We will resume play and conduct the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs in two hub cities that will be identified and announced at a later date. One will be the site for the resuming Eastern Conference clubs. The other will play host to the resuming Western Conference clubs. Each will have secure arenas, practice facilities, hotels, and local transportation for our players, coaches, and essential staff.
So they're going to play. They're going to do it.
How many teams typically are in the playoffs?
16. The format typically is exactly like the format in the NBA, where you got 8 teams from the West, 8 teams from the East. You start your tournament 1 through 8, and you go. And so, that's how it goes in the NHL. But now they're going to put 24 in, where the top 4 from each conference will play each other. Like the 4 in the West will play the other 4 in the West, and they'll seed them according to that little mini tournament. The bottom 8 in each half will have another tournament, and then the winners of that tournament advance to the top half. So it's a very different format, and it could be a little confusing. The good news is, though, here's the deal. The NBA people pay attention to it across the board. Even if you're not a diehard NBA fan, you watch the playoffs, you understand the format. The NHL really has hockey people watching it, so they're going to be able to follow the formatics of this. I don't know if the NBA could adopt something similar to this because people would just be terribly confused, whereas the NHL hockey people are going to follow. There's not a ton of casual hockey people, so you don't have to worry about losing your casual people the way that baseball or basketball might.
Well, I don't understand why they only put 24 in, though. So
we want all 31?
If it's 16, right, that's normal. Then you're going to add the other, and then you say, well, the last seven, eh? What did the last seven do to the commissioner and his people for them not to even be considered? I mean, like, come on, seriously.
They had to been awful, right?
You had to be really, 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 really bad to just be put in on the back burner of the situation. I think what this does, though, is it opens up the eyes of the other leagues to be able to have some sort of template to follow to say, okay, we could do some of the things, not necessarily copy it the whole way, but at least get some sort of format where you could see where it's going, how it worked out. You know, if they start before the other league, nothing says that the NHL is going to start before the NBA or the NFL or True. Major League Baseball. There's nothing that says that. We're just going to assume, based on them announcing that they came up with a template and a format to move things forward, that they're probably ready to start at some point before the other leagues. And if that's the case, it will certainly give the other leagues something to look at and be able to say, okay, we could tweak this or tweak that a little bit to be different, and this was good or this was bad. We don't want to duplicate that. It'll certainly help, I'm sure, in that phase.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this tournament within the playoffs tournament, you know, sort of presentation that Bettman has laid out. I get why the other teams were left out. I think it's crazy that they've created this whole new tournament within a tournament and the LA Kings still isn't good enough to be included.
Or the Ducks.
Or the Ducks. Or San Jose.
It's like,
they just all California out, huh?
And just out. Yeah. Just out. You so bad. Even we created a tournament, you still couldn't get in. So I mean, so I think that's funny. But in terms of, you know, how this is going to play out and why they did it the way that they did, I'm going to assume it's based upon the remaining schedule, the amount of points that were available, and whether or not those teams had a legitimate shot of catching another team and making it in a normal sort of season. And that's something the NBA can look toward because what we got, like, what, 15 games left, roughly?
Mm-hmm.
If there are teams that are within, let's just say, you know, three games. I think three games isn't unreasonable. If
Portland is 3.5 back. Just to get that's what Damian Lillard was so worked up about, is that they're on the outside looking in, but it's only by 3.5 games.
Yeah, so if you got 15 games left and you know that the eighth seed is Memphis and you know what their schedule, remaining schedule is going to be, and we were already thinking that they might be in trouble before the pandemic shut everything down, that I could see the NBA maybe considering doing the same thing because, in all likelihood, the Memphis Grizzlies, if the season were to play out, was not going to make the playoffs based upon schedule alone. So well, I wouldn't mind seeing the NBA try something like that because I do think there's something to be said about having some sort of equity in terms of who makes the postseason, in addition to the fact you don't want to have as many stigmas attached to the championship. And giving everyone who was on the outskirts a chance to make the playoffs, I think eliminates one kind of stigma.
I think what you need to be really cautious of, and I like that the NHL is trying this. I like that the NHL is saying, let's do a tournament inside of a tournament before we do our tournament. It's confusing, but I like the idea of tinkering with some things, especially in this environment where all the rules are kind of out the window and we're going to have to come up with the best possible solutions. What I don't like, and what I think that the NHL is potentially messing with, and especially in hockey, this happens arguably more than it does in other sports, but I don't need to create a scenario where a bad team can find themselves in the middle of the playoffs. You know what I mean? I don't, because all of a sudden,
yeah, I don't want to see it.
The Kings won a Stanley Cup out of the eighth spot in the playoffs. That, and in hockey, that happens once in a while. But I don't need to see a Portland team get into the playoffs. If they've played 70 of the 82 games or whatever it is, you've proven that this is not what it is. I don't need Damian Lillard to get hot for a week and take out one of the really good teams
because we decided
to open this thing up. That's a bad plan.
But that's the same thing I was saying basically about the Brooklyn Nets. It's like Kyrie and them, yes, they would have been a better team if KD and Kyrie was on it the whole season, but guess what? They wasn't. So all of a sudden, they've had a layoff and they've rested up, and you want to put them in just because it's fascinating to see. I mean, like, no. I don't want to let them be bad. Let them be bad. Get rid of them. Let them be bad so they can go on about their business and concentrate on next season.
Well, the NBA needs to make a decision not just about the Nets, but just about rosters, period. Because there are a lot of teams that can still make tweaks that might be seen unfair because they all of a sudden.
I mean, there ain't a whole lot of junk that's left out there, though, right?
It's not about junk. It's about whether or not the players who were injured before and wouldn't have been available become available. It's about what happens to the future DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, but my point is there's not a lot of people. There's not a lot of people out there, though. It's four or five dudes that's on the sidelines.
But some of those four or five dudes are huge game changers. KD and Kyrie are significant game changers. DeMarcus Cousins, depending upon where he lands, could be a game changer. So the question is, will the NBA do something to freeze rosters so that the seedings can remain true and not somehow be usurped because now you've had an opportunity to add players who weren't available? Well, as far as NHL is concerned, it's not true that the best teams always come through. I kind of knew that because I Googled.
Right.
And the President's Trophy winner since 85, 86 have only gone to the Stanley Cup and won it eight times.
Yeah.
So more often than not, a lower seed team does win a championship.
Man, they can put them all in. They can go get some college teams and put them in, too. I don't care about no NHL, boy.
Well, but the NHL is different for the simple reason that if my goalie is playing better than yours, I can beat you. Even if the other guys are just totally overmatched, if my guy standing in net is better than yours, I got a really good chance of beating you, even if my team isn't nearly as good. Basketball really doesn't have that. Even if I, for instance, if I've got the best rim protector in the league, but the other four guys on my team are not nearly as good as the other five guys on your team, I'm going to lose. Yeah. I'm going to lose almost every time. In hockey, that's why they're opening this thing up. One of these teams that's the 21st or 23rd team, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they could end up winning the Stanley Cup. And to your point, Key, it's a bad idea. You don't want the 24th best team in the league to potentially win a championship, because if we're talking about asterisks, that is an ultimate. That this team won the Stanley Cup because the tournament got expanded because of coronavirus, and all of a sudden we had this weird format. This guy got hot. They win the Stanley Cup. That's an asterisk.
But see, that's the same thing. If Brooklyn was to insert these two dudes in the lineup and they go on and win a championship, they ain't played all damn year long, and all of a sudden you put them in the lineup, they go on and win a championship.
Well, that's what I was talking about yesterday when I was upset at the idea that the Lakers may have to face the Nets at the 15th seed because we were being punished for having an outstanding season and the Nets were being rewarded for us being in a pandemic.
And then, you guys, you tell me if you think this is different, because I think it would be very different to me if, let's say, that this thing played out and all of a sudden, with about a week to go in the regular season, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving came back, and they're still the eighth seed, but now all of a sudden they were back before the end of the regular season. That this thing has gone on already a couple of months. We're probably still the better part of 40 or 50 or 60 days away from starting. You've extended the season about 4 months, well beyond the boundary of any point where they would have been able to return under normal circumstances. This feels like something outside of the bounds of normalcy, and not just, hey, we got them back right before the end, we got hot, and it happened. You got a four-month window potentially to get these guys right. That's totally different.
It's totally different, Travis. So if they came back, let's say they came back with a month or so to go, month and a half to go in the season, I'm okay with that. I ain't got no problem with that. But you telling me they coming back after sitting out, chilling, and while we went through all of this, working on their game, then you going to just bring them back then and let them now? No, I don't want that. Just stay on the sideline. Just stay on the sideline, because it's not only is it not fair, just from a Lakers standpoint, it's not fair to the rest of the league. Now, I also know why it could be done. I mean, why it would be done, because it gives the league great some TV. More juice. You yeah. know, it gives them more juice. I understand that part of it, but in terms of playing up against the teams that have been working their tails off all season long, well, if that's the case, you might as well do that every single year. Guys could just take breaks and come back during the playoffs.
Well, they do.
It's no, I'm just saying.
Is this normally guys who have severe season-ending injuries wouldn't normally have enough time to do that. But this is unique, and this is what I was talking about yesterday. As they define what the season's going to look like in terms of resuming, they need to make a decision, and an equitable one, in terms of roster construction. They can't allow a team like the Nets that was seeded 15th to then usurp this seeding by allowing players who wouldn't have been available to be playing. They should not allow that. Or if they do that, then what they should do is play a tournament within a tournament and force them to make it through before the actual playoffs like they're doing in the NHL.
Friend of the show, ESPN MLB insider Pedro Gomez joins us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, the NHL has a plan in place to return the action. How far away are we from Major League Baseball? Joining us right now is Pedro Gomez, friend of the show, ESPN MLB insider on the Sprint People's Hotline. Good morning, Pedro. How are you?
I am well, Travis. How are you guys? It's Travis Fantastic. And the fellas today.
Travis. All right. Thank you, Pedro. I like the sound of that. I like the sound of that.
I bet That's you do.
Pedro, okay, here we go again. How much closer are we now to Major League Baseball? Obviously, the owners tried to dupe the players, which I understood the taking some of the money and trying to reduce it, but based on the format and the plan that they put together, they must think we're stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're trying to maximize their money. There's no doubt about that. And, I mean, you think about the history of the world, that's always been the case. I thought it was really fascinating to see, though, that the money bumps up considerably if there is a postseason. And what that tells you is that there are big doubts about whether this can get to the finish line, so to speak. Look, I think we will see a start of baseball. I do. I do believe that there will be a start. There's still got to be a lot of issues that have to be addressed. But the fact that the money jumps up so much if there's a postseason, I think that's a really strong indication that there are a lot of issues and there are a lot of obstacles to jump over in order to make this happen all the way to the finish line. And they may not necessarily think that they can do it, which is why all that postseason bonus money is included in this first, well, I don't know if it's the first negotiating stance that the owners have made, but it's certainly one of the first. And that really is the big obstacle. If it starts, can it continue? Can it sustain? And I don't think the owners think it can. That's why they put all that money at the end of the contract.
What do they think is unsustainable? If they get the season started, assuming it's not a health issue, what would ultimately
happen? I think it would be health. That's, I think, the big issue, that people start testing positive, maybe older coaches, things like that, and that they would have to shut it down. And if they shut it down, it's not going to start up again. Then I think we'll look, if they start and stop, that's going to be it. And I think it is the health issues, the potential health issues that are the biggest stumbling block in order for them to cross the finish line. And I think they know it.
But I almost called you Jose. Sorry about that.
Pedro.
Pedro.
I got you, Pedro. I got you, baby.
No, I almost called him Jose. My
right
bad.
Now.
No. I know Jose, so relax. Pedro, but the rest of the professional leagues have the same issues with administrative staff and coaches. I mean, it's the older side of what we're dealing with. So I don't hear any of the other leagues saying that they're worried about stoppage. I haven't heard that as much as I hear Major League Baseball. Why is that?
I think probably the sheer numbers. You know, you look at the NBA or NHL, and there aren't as many ancillary people that put together a game, so to speak. I think that there are just so many factors in baseball, larger rosters, things like that. Look, the NFL could be facing a similar situation. What the NFL has going for it is that they have time on their side. You know, that the league doesn't start, the regular season doesn't start until September. Camps don't start till, I think, the last week of July, is it? Somewhere in there. So they've got some time on their side right now to still try to figure things out. I just think that when you look at baseball coaching staffs and things like that, there are, you know, Brent Strom is the pitching coach for the Houston Astros. He's 72 or 73. Dusty Baker is 70. He's the manager of the Astros. I mean, the Astros alone have, I think, three or four people that are 60 and above on their staff. And that does not include trainers and equipment people and clubhouse attendants. So there are some definite issues. I'm not saying the other sports aren't going to face them, but the NHL and NBA, I think, had 80% of their regular season finished. So they could almost jump right into the postseason, which is one of the plans the NHL said they would do. I think as of yesterday, their commissioner said, we're going to have a 24-team postseason if we start up. So that's already been decided who those 24 are. NBA could come up with something very similar. In this case, I think that baseball is it's just logistically, it's in a more difficult spot. You're also looking at the NBA playing all their games in Orlando, which could be good, could be bad, but baseball wants to do as much as it can to have their 30 clubs play in the 28 cities that they currently reside in. Now, Toronto's not going to allow that because Canada has different rules. So it's already hit an obstacle there. It's just a lot of different hoops they have to jump through.
You know, I understand, Pedro, that much of the focus is on, you know, logistics in terms of Major League Baseball. But my heart really just aches for what's happening in minor league baseball. Are there any conversations about, you know, another one-time payment or, you know, something to do in terms of helping these young men whose dreams are not just on hold, but are detrimental to their overall wealth?
Yeah, LZ, I mean, you're talking to someone who's a father of a minor leaguer. So, you know, my son is in a quandary. He's in a big quandary right now. Look, they're having this many difficulties starting a big league season, which is where the revenue is. The minor leagues are not going to happen this year. It's just, it's almost impossible to see how that could happen. There's clubs already releasing 30, 35 players during the last week or so. The Diamondbacks, the Orioles, the White Sox, they've all released upwards of 30 to 35 players from their minor league system. Their pay is only guaranteed through the end of May, which is this week. After that, there are no guarantees. I doubt minor leaguers are going to get paid. They are in a really, really tough spot. I think you're going to see a lot of minor league players who say, I tried and I'm going to walk away from the game. And that's not necessarily a good thing for the future of the game. We've already seen that the major leagues want to get rid of 42 minor league teams, and that's going to happen for next year. And that means, you know, 42 times, let's say 30, that's how many players are going to be gone from overall baseball. It's the development of the league, of the game, is not going in a good direction.
Pedro Gomez joining us here on the morning show on the Sprint People's Hotline. Pedro, we were talking earlier about Mike Tyson's rumored comeback. We started knocking around some names of some other older guys that maybe we think could step back into their sports and have a little success. I know you covered him for a long time. If Barry Bonds in his mid-50s got back in shape, could he hit 250 in the major leagues right now?
Oh, boy. At this age, I doubt it. I don't know any. You talk about the greatest hitters ever, and I don't know that they could do that in their 50s against, you know, the kind of pitching that they would be seeing at this age. I think it'd be fascinating to see something like that, but 250 is a tall order. I mean, when you consider, I believe last year the median average in all of baseball was like 265-ish, 263, something like that. So 250, that would be a tall order.
Mm. Could he hit 200?
What do you think is feasible? Yeah, what do you think is feasible? We're trying to get Barry back in the game, Pedro.
Well, you need a club to get him first, to sign him first. That was difficult when he was 38, 39 years old, or 40, whatever it was, his last year with the Giants. There was nobody willing to do that, and he had a decent season. So there might be other obstacles there in terms of getting Barry back.
Yeah, probably one or two. Probably one or two along the way. Pedro Gomez covers baseball for ESPN. Friend of the program. Pedro, appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
Bye, Jose.
Thank you, Zane.
Take care. LZ, stay warm.
Yes, sir. Straight 100 degrees the rest of the week.
Absolutely. And moving up. Moving up from there.
All right. Thanks, Pedro. Coming up next, Dan Graziano will join us. We'll talk a little NFL football. How close is Jalen Ramsey to getting the deal done with the Rams? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
All right, as promised, joining us right now on the Sprint People's Hotline, he covers the NFL for ESPN, Dan Graziano. Woo-hoo! Joining us here. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, guys. How are you?
Good. What was that pause?
This good weather, Daniel. What?
Well, I mean, you know, it's what? I'd rather be, eating at restaurants and playing golf every day and all that stuff, you know. But within the context of our times, I am fine. I'm healthy. My family's healthy. And it's
there we
a
go.
Lot worse. So fine. I went with fine.
Well,
there
it looks go. Like everything is going good, including the NFL getting back to some sort of normalcy, opening up the facilities last week for a handful of administrative people. Soon will be opening up for players to resume back at workouts and coaches coming in. How close are we to actually having training camp, though?
To be determined. Right now, what we know is the off-season programs, which would involve OTAs, mini camps, those aren't going to run past June 26th. So if there's, and it looks like everything's going to be virtual anyway. So what they have to figure out is a month later, which is when training camps would start. So they're having those conversations along with conversations about what the season will look like. Can it start on time? Will there be fans in the stands? If so, will there have to be limitations on the number of fans? They're having all these conversations. Nobody knows whether they're going to be able to have in-person training camps yet. They're in a stage right now where some staff is allowed in the facilities. Coaches aren't, because until everyone can have their coaches in, no one can. That's the NFL's rule. And then once they can get coaches back in, they're going to work on protocols for getting players back in. And then if they can figure all that out by the end of July, then yes, it's conceivable there could be training camps. But it is still too early to know for sure.
Dan, understanding that, you know, the logistics of everything because of the pandemic makes timelines very difficult. But I'm curious as to, how does the feeding process into the NFL is impacted by this, by the pandemic as well? In other words, how does the supplemental draft get impacted? Player drafting, like how much of a pushback is this process suffering because of where we are right now?
Well, in terms of the supplemental draft, I think that's a very interesting question we don't have answers to yet. You know, would be more guys inclined to come out in the supplemental draft because of the circumstances, because of the questions around college football this year, which we still don't have answers on that either. And I think that's something to be worked out. I think right now where the NFL stands is that unlike the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, they're not in the middle of a season. They're not trying to get back to complete a season as those leagues are. So it's not as urgent for them. They have the luxury of time and the ability to watch what other leagues do and how it goes. They are keeping a close eye on this German soccer league that started back up a couple of weekends ago because they feel like similar sized arenas, et cetera. So they're watching very closely. They're talking. The Players Association and the league are talking all the time. The Players Association is having conference calls with players all the time. And right now what they're trying to do is gather questions, figure out what's important to address, and then figure out if they can address the questions. A lot of the questions, unfortunately, just don't have answers right now. The NFL is lucky in that it still has a couple of months before regular season games would be starting, and they'd have to get more concrete answers.
Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN, joining us here on the morning show. Dan, how surprised are you that as we sit here on May 27th, that Cam Newton's not on a team?
I'm not surprised because of just sort of the way that situation has unfolded. Released during a time when no one could do a physical, weird off season in which, you know, there's not a quarterback shortage the way we're used to there being around the NFL, right? So it's not like there are teams climbing all over each other to get a shot at this guy. I don't know, and I don't want to be one of the people who is speaking to the idea of, well, he wants a starter job, he would take a backup job. I don't know what his mindset is on what kind of contract he'd be looking for, what kind of role he'd be looking for. I think it's fair, if you want to sit here and assume, based on his credential, his ability, that he would think he should be a starter somewhere. But there are no starter jobs available, so he waits. And they can't get a look at the foot. The foot is the key thing. If he can't run, which, you know, he had foot surgery, he missed all his games last year because of the foot. The Panthers would tell anybody who asked, the shoulder's fine, it's the foot. If he can't run, if Cam Newton can't run the way he used to, then you really don't know what kind of player you're signing. Because we've not seen Cam Newton have to operate without his legs. So I think the question is, what are we getting here? Is it worth it given our situation? Can our doctors get a look at him and satisfy our curiosity? And so far, the answer to that last question has been no. And for that reason, I'm not surprised. I think he'll be on a team, but I'm not surprised it's taken this long given the external issues.
So once they open up and the doctors are able to put their hands and eyes on him, because shouldn't he be able to, and correct me if I'm wrong, shouldn't he be able to fly to a team's doctor's facility to get examined, not in the team's facility, but the doctor's facility outside the team to be examined?
Well, that's against the rules right now. I mean, then mid-March, the NFL put a stop to all that in terms of in-person physical. So, like, if you sign a contract, right, like who I was talking to a player a couple weeks ago, signed with the Raiders, right? And he lives in Arizona. He signed with the Raiders. The Raiders hooked him up with a doctor near his home in Arizona to get a physical, a doctor that they were comfortable with, and they trusted the results. And so that's a past physical, and now he signed. So you could do that, like, if you wanted to sign Cam Newton. But this is, again, this is based on the conversations I've had with people who run NFL teams. You want your own doctors to get a look at the foot because there's an issue. Like, if you're signing a player to a free agent contract who wasn't hurt last year, who doesn't have an injury history, then you get the regular standard physical, you're fine. But you've got to assure yourself, yes, that he can still run on that foot. He can still be the kind of player we've seen him be in the past. And if you can't, then it's very hard to decide what kind of contract to offer him. And so at this point, the inability to do the in-person physical has been an impediment.
Mm-hmm. Dan, I'm curious, you know, shifting gears just a little bit in terms of actual play on the field. In your estimation, why isn't Dak signed? And is he worth $45 million at the end of this contract, the number that's floated out there?
Well, I'll say this about that. I don't believe, and again, this is not just guessing. I mean, this is you know, educated guessing, talking to people who are close to the situation. I don't believe Dak Prescott or the Dallas Cowboys cares at all what's in the fifth year. I mean, you could say, like, yeah, we'll give you $11 bajillion in the fifth year. I mean, like, either the year's not going to happen or they're going to redo the contract before then. The fifth year doesn't matter. Dak Prescott is going to care what's in the first 3 years of the contract, like every player who's signing a big contract.
Absolutely.
Does. So I think the reason Dak Prescott is not signed is a very simple one, which is they just haven't got to the number. The Cowboys have offered him a significant amount of money. He has asked for more, and the deadline is not till July 15th. So
absolutely,
until you get to that deadline and see whether either side moves, I don't think it's fair to judge the situation. I don't think the Cowboys are going to just give him what he wants, and I don't think he's just going to sign for what they want. until there's something that forces the issue. And if they get past the deadline and he's willing to play on a franchise tag, which would be no surprise, he played for $2 million last year with nothing guaranteed beyond. So he would probably play for 31.4 with nothing guaranteed beyond, having already done the much harder one. So he has leverage. He has the ability to wait, and so far he's waiting. And I really do. I personally think it gets signed at that July 15th deadline, but I can't be 100% sure. And he's been very disciplined in his approach, and right now he feels like he has a number in mind, and they're not there yet.
Let me ask you, Dan. What if he doesn't sign as of July 15th? What if he just decides I'm gonna pull a Le'Veon Bell? And do you think there's enough teams out there that would be willing to try and get him next year?
If he doesn't sign and he plays on a franchise tag, the Cowboys can franchise him again next year, but it'll cost $38 million. So that's why, like, you know, okay.
But if he, sign the franchise tag,
right,
then he forfeits this
year. Oh, if he doesn't play. All right, so the Le'Veon Bell comparison would be next year, right? Because Le'Veon did play on one franchise tag and then didn't play on the second. So the direct comparison there would be if he didn't sign, he skipped the 2021 season. If he skips this season, that's tricky because he hasn't made, by NFL standards, you know, real money yet, right? Like he played out a 4-year, fourth round rookie contract. So the money he makes on the franchise tag this year sort of enables him to pull the Le'Veon Bell if that's what he wants next year. So I don't know that it's a threat. I think he would play on the franchise tag as opposed to sit out in 2020. It could get interesting next year, as you point out, but it could also be similar to a Kirk Cousins situation where he plays on two straight franchise tags and then goes free agent because the number gets too ridiculous. So fascinating situation of a player who's assessed his own worth and is willing to stick by that assessment, and we'll see how far he takes it.
Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN. Dan, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks a bunch.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. All right, take it or shake it. Coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, Keith, so kind of following up where we left off with Dan Graziano, let's talk a little bit about Cam. Very quickly, let's listen to Dominique Foxworth, who is talking about whether or not Cam Newton underachieved.
That he hasn't underachieved, and maybe you can frame the question slightly differently. Have the Panthers underachieved with Cam Newton? I think they failed him in many ways, but it's hard to look at the player that he was in college and then the player that he was as a rookie and think that he could only compile three winning seasons in the 9 years that he's been in the NFL. He's only been to the Pro Bowl three times. He had that one run to the Super Bowl and also an MVP season, but when he came into this league, we thought that he was going to take it by storm and at least this team was going to be in contention regularly, but that's not true. Like I mentioned, they only had three seasons where they had more wins than losses. I don't know how you can frame that as anything other than an underachievement.
Cam Newton has underachieved to this point in his career.
It's ridiculous. Dominique Foxworth is just talking. He underachieved. What are you talking about? The dude went to the Pro Bowl. He's the MVP. I mean, now forget the Pro Bowls. He went to the Super Bowl. He's been an MVP. They ain't never had no weapons around him other than McCaffrey. I mean, you gave him Kelvin Benjamin that can't play dead. Is Kelvin Benjamin on anybody's team right now?
No.
He's on the same team as Cam.
Did we lose?
But there is something to be said. You played nine seasons, and only three times you had more wins than losses.
I think we lost Keith.
I didn't know that bad.
All right, I'm taking it. You played nine seasons and only three times you were above 500, and you were the number one overall pick.
I hear you, but let's also say in nine seasons he's gone to the Super Bowl and won an MVP. It's really hard to say that a guy that won an MVP and went to a Super Bowl is underachieving. That just sounds crazy.
It sounds crazy until you really break down the full length. How do you know that he didn't actually just have a hot year, right? As opposed we're talking about a career versus a hot season. If you pull away, you know, say, you know, both of Aaron Rodgers' MVP seasons and just focus in on the years in which he did win MVP, he's still going in the Hall of Fame. So when you look at this conversation, I personally wouldn't have said underachieved, but I certainly understand the perspective given the entirety of his career and not just the one season in which he won the MVP and went to the Super Bowl in that one year. Take that away. What do you have left?
All right, let's move on to the next one. Here's Paul Feinbaum talking about Reggie Bush and his refusal to take responsibility.
But in college athletics, I mean, there are many filters. And I don't mean to shoot the messenger here, Reggie Bush, when he has a good message. But you can't forget that he disgraced his school. He had a Heisman taken away from him. And frankly, I'd rather go to Tom Brady for a golf lesson than I would for Reggie Bush for advice on what to do in college, because I just think he's trying to cover up all the mistakes that he's made without really taking a responsibility. And I think that's the key.
Jalen alluded
to it. You have to take responsibility when you're a young person. You just can't blame it all on someone else.
Reggie Bush is trying to cover up his mistakes without taking his responsibility. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
No, Reggie, no.
When you look at the entirety of the conversation he was having, it really was kind of insightful based upon the things that happened to him as a young person. And this notion that Reggie Bush disgraced USC, you know who disgraces USC? USC. For treating Reggie Bush this way. I understand that there was a compromise made with the NCAA because of the things that he had done in terms of the house in San Diego, yada, yada, yada. I get all of that. But he's a kid. He's a kid who made a mistake. And he's being punished for this like an adult who egregiously did something to derail the program as opposed to leading into glory. Reggie Bush's name should be right there with the all-time greats. Every single time you talk about USC football, that's how important he was to the program. And to try to pretend as if he was anything other than a great player and a model citizen because he violated some arbitrary rules set by an NCAA organization that many of us view as corrupt is just a wrong narrative.
I don't understand why this thing has been put out in the universe about how Reggie is saying that players shouldn't get paid or it's a bad deal to let these players have. It's not what he said. What he said was if you're going to give them money, you need to teach them how to manage their money and how to make sure not to get taken advantage of so their money gets taken from them. That's an entirely different message than, oh, I got mine, but no one else should get theirs, which is what people are trying to paint it as. It's just inaccurate.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love Paul and everything, but this notion that the NCAA is some sort of arbiter of good behavior and morality is just ridiculous to begin with, and it's a very difficult premise for me to have this conversation with.
All right, let's go to Kendrick Perkins here. Kendrick Perkins says that the dream team was, or I should say not the dream team, let me start that over again, that the last dance was full of lies. Here's Kendrick Perkins.
They had a problem with Isaiah Thomas' competitive nature. He was the ultimate competitor. That's the only way I see them keeping them off the dream team. Now, and saying that they didn't want to play with him. Now, here's my thing. The last documentary was the best sports documentary that I ever saw. But it was one thing I took away from it. It was full of lies, and it was full of snitching. And when we look at Michael Jordan, and I'm glad he's not my GOAT. LeBron James is my GOAT, but that's y'all GOAT. He lied. He threw everybody under the bus. At the end of the day, the last dance was to make MJ look like a superhero and make everybody else look like a villain. If you go down the line, Scottie Pippen is pissed off. Horace Grant is pissed off. Isaiah Thomas is off. And then, God rest his soul, Jerry Krause wasn't even here to defend himself.
The last dance
take
is
it,
full
whatever
of
it is, take it. Whatever the question is, take it.
Preach on.
Amen.
The only thing I disagree with him about, and I don't even know what your question is, Travis, but the only thing I disagree with him about
is, go this, ahead. Do your
is
thing.
This notion that The Last Dance is the greatest documentary he's ever seen. Maybe he hadn't seen enough documentaries, but by definition, part of what makes a documentary so great is that it's true. So if you can't say that it's full of lies and then say it's a great documentary, you can say it's a great piece of entertainment, but what makes a documentary great is the truthfulness and insight, not the lies. I could make a great documentary if I could just sit on my ass and lie all day. You're supposed to be talking about the things that actually occurred. I understand that people think I'm an MJ hater. I am not an MJ hater.
Take it.
I am not an MJ hater. But my whole career It's about telling it like it is, no matter how painful the is happens to be. And the truth of the matter is, and you guys know this, right out the gate, I was calling Yahtzee when they wouldn't talk about James Worthy's damn ankle. I was like, okay, what kind of hell documentary is this?
We can argue the merits of
stop
the project.
On Jordan. All you do is hate on Jordan.
Are you back, Key? Are you on your phone now?
I'm on my phone because I think my Comrex box is shot. Mm-hmm. This is like one from like 1985.
Here's the question I don't get, and this is the part about what Kendrick Perkins was getting at and everything else. Michael Jordan said before this entire thing started that this thing's going to make people not like me. This thing's going to paint me in a light that most people are going to be uncomfortable with. And fine, whatever. I think we all knew Michael Jordan was a pretty tough guy, a ruthless competitor. We knew that he was the most important guy in the league. We knew that he was the guy calling the shots for his team and for a lot of the stuff going on in the league. But why he refused to take ownership of this when we know that we have his voice on tape saying, if he comes, I don't. Why is he so reluctant to wrap his arms around that? Because to me, it doesn't seem like a big deal at all. And yet, here's Rod Thorne telling a story about it that's not true. Michael Jordan telling a story about it that's not true. Why is this the one that they're holding on to so tightly?
Well, it's not the only one that they're holding on to.
I think the reason is that it's one of those deals where it's a player that was celebrated amongst the NBA. He was part of the Bad Boys. There was this rivalry. Jordan took over Chicago, where Isaiah's from. You got all of those sort of little underlying things. He not only was disliked by a number of players in the NBA, you know, Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson had a problem with him, you know, obviously Michael Jordan. And it's the Olympic team. And clearly he was one of the better players at that time that deserved to be on Olympic team. If you're taking broken down Larry Bird and, you know, Chris Mullin and you're adding guys that are on the team that's just okay, not necessarily okay, but, you know, John Stockton. And you look at that, plus Michael doesn't want to show his cards of the power that he had in the NBA, especially when he didn't go to bat for Scottie Pippen's new contract. If he had so much power that he had, he could have used that power and forced his will up on Reinsdorf and Krause to get a deal done for Scottie Pippen. It seems like he refused to do that. So with all that being said, it's better to just say, no, I didn't do that. Because people will start to poke holes in everything and say, well, you have so much power, you didn't do this. It goes back to, he didn't stand up for social injustice at the time. All of those sort of things are all in the bag. And people want to see that bag exposed.
All right. The NHL has made a proposal to return to play with 24 teams in the postseason. How far behind is baseball? How far behind is the NBA? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.